Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Everyday Bitcoin, a newer Bitcoin podcast focusing on Bitcoin adoption and Bitcoin its use as money. I'm coming at you today on February 25th, 2026, block height at 938,299 and a current USD exchange rate of about 67,300 US dollars to Bitcoin. For one Bitcoin, price has been up, it's been down, it's been volatile, it's been doing all kinds of things, but it doesn't really matter. But what does matter is that today I'm joined by a new friend of mine that I met last week. Yes, Avin Krishand. Avin, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you here. We've been attempting to do this for about a week now, and the snow and the weather has been playing a role, but finally we're here. So it's great to have you. If you could you just get a quick background on like your Bitcoin journey and how you found Bitcoin and what brings you here today?
Yeah, I'd love to. So Bitcoin started for me back in like, close to 10 years now, April of 2016. I applied for a startup not knowing much about Bitcoin, got the job. And just my journey kind of started from there. Was really intrigued by Bitcoin's technology and was wanting to learn a lot, but there wasn't a lot of information out about it in the 2016-2017 timeframe. Then 2018, I joined Unchained Capital, worked there for 2.5 years doing quality assurance testing, client services, product, operations, you name it, I probably did it. Then found my way into Bitcoin education, taking all of what I learned to help other people learn about Bitcoin in less time than it usually takes. And then found my way to Amboss thanks to the Daniel. Yeah, so I met Keith through the Daniel, and then also have been working on recycling for Bitcoin as a side project. How do you get a little bit of Bitcoin and ever easily as recycling? So it's kind of been my Bitcoin journey.
Okay, cool. Yeah, no, yeah. I like cut out very briefly, just like when I thought you finished your thought, but I wasn't sure. But yeah, the Daniel introduced us to, I am yet to personally meet, but he's actually, the listeners, it's another pretty base Bitcoiner. I've been trying to get him on the show for a while now, but he's been having some things going on, but hopefully sooner than later, he'll be here. But yeah, cool. So 10 years, it's a long time. So you're a pretty seasoned veteran to the game here. When you said that the technology side really intrigued you, so do you have more of a technical background?
Yeah, so at the time I was still in college, half my degree. So I did management information systems. So it was half business, half computer science. And at the time I was in a database class learning about SQL, and what really intrigued me was the blockchain, right? Like core functionality. Well, we have all this public data, but it's anonymized and you own it, right? Like banks don't own it. And that really intrigued me. It really was the technology and this kind of just feeling of knowing Bitcoin was going to be big without knowing much about Bitcoin at all. The company I started working for dissipated within 8 months. They were trying to do Bitcoin payments for e-commerce websites. So ironically, what working at Amboss is kind of like a full circle moment for me, because we went from like payments to a store of value back to payments. And this time around, Lightning Network is around, and there's so much more to the Lightning Network than back in 2016 when a layer two wasn't even announced yet.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I actually just had Jesse from Amboss, so I guess your boss at Amboss, on the show in the previous episode. So that was an interesting chat with him. With Amboss, what exactly are you doing there? You're doing more of the marketing end, correct?
Yeah, I help Amboss with their social media marketing. Jesse goes on a lot of podcasts, and Amboss is also doing a lot for the Bitcoin space. And when I started working there, they weren't taking advantage as much of the opportunities to educate and get their name out there, more like brand recognition. And so I've been helping them with that.
Nice. Yeah, I feel like I learned a lot in my chat with Jesse, because Amboss, unless you like have a pretty decent understanding of, well, Bitcoin, and then obviously layer two like Lightning, it's kind of difficult to kind of like comprehend or really just understand like what it is and why it's important, and helping people and just really providing a great service to the network and helping it scale and grow. But cool. But what I was very interested about when the Daniel messaged me about you was your recycling thing. So, and we talked about this a little bit in person last week, but could you just give a rundown, like how exactly are you combining Bitcoin and recycling? Yeah, if you could just talk about that, that'd be really cool.
Sure. So Rebottle first started off as a project called Bitcoin Can. The idea was, how do I get a little Bitcoin in anyone in everyone's pocket? So as a Bitcoin educator, I've seen a lot of like barrier to entry being like, how do I obtain this? But not just how do I attain it, how do I actually use it in my day-to-day? And one thing I noticed is going from on-chain Bitcoin to Lightning Bitcoin isn't the simplest thing, especially for people who are just stacking sats, right? And So the idea of recycling for Bitcoin is earning Bitcoin that isn't on a layer one, but it's Bitcoin that's on a layer two. So back in 2023, I did a hackathon for the project where I met Mr. G. And the idea was, all right, if I go to what we call a reverse vending machine. So a reverse vending machine is a machine, kind of looks like a vending machine, but instead of taking something out, you're putting your empty bottles in. And so For people who don't know, in New York State, there's a 5-cent deposit for certain bottles, beers and like carbonated sodas and water bottles. And not all containers are covered. That's, I think, a big part of it. But these machines you go to with your empty containers and you put them in, and at the end, you print off a piece of paper, then you take your paper to the store, and the store will now redeem it for you in cash. And you're also capped by how much the store will allow you to earn from that store. So you could technically have like bags and bags of bottles and basically put them in a machine, but the store will cap you at your payout. The machine may not do that. The idea here is, now I've just like laid out steps, right? You have like 3-4 different steps to go get fiat cash, correct? And with Bitcoin, we make it simpler. You put your bottles into the machine, and at the end you say, hey, I want to get paid out in Bitcoin. And the idea is, we show you a QR code, or you scan your own QR code, and the sats, the payout you would get in fiat convert into sats, and you get them in sats rather than having to go through the whole cycle of getting your cash. Yeah. So I did that hackathon. And G is a redemption operator. He's a business, individual business owner who offers his clients actually Bitcoin in return for their bottles. And he usually does like minimum pickups of 1,000 items. So $50 worth. And about, from when we were talking, 5% of his clients were asking for Bitcoin. It's not a lot, but it's still a significant amount, 5%. Especially because most people who are doing bottle redemption are people who are looking for either a secondary income, or this is their primary source of income. And in most cases, right now, it is harder in the United States to pay with Bitcoin than it is to just pay with fiat. Which is why people go the fiat route. It's a little bit of the background of Rebottle and the project.
Okay. I guess, so people actually do the rebottling as like primary streams of income? Because I feel like, in my experience, the people that I see doing it tend to be, I guess, more so homeless people. But is it actually a passive, well, not passive, but is this like a side income stream that a lot of people are actually utilizing? I don't see New Jersey, so we don't do that here. But whenever I'm in the city, I always tend to see more so homeless people collecting cans and stuff.
Yeah, so you don't need it. It's untaxable income, right? Like you're going to the store. I'm going to put out an example. You buy in New York, let's say you go buy a six pack of beer, right? You pay 30 cents on top of what you pay. And either you can put the 30 cent, you can either put those empty bottles on the sidewalk for someone else to go take your 30 cents, or you can go get your 30 cents back from when you go return those containers, whether it's to a store or an independent redemption business that will take that with no like cap. So the machines and regular stores may have like a cap on how much you can return. But if you go to like independent businesses like Mr. G, there is no cap on that because they'll just take anything that is that has a value to it. As far as streams of income, this is for anyone and everyone. Mostly people who are homeless do it because it is kind of a really easy way to earn money. I mean, you just need 20 depositable bottles for a dollar. And I mean, you go, when I first moved to New York, so I've been in the city for about 3 years and I came from Texas. There's no bill there. Recycling rates are 12%. New York, they're 70%. So you oh, wow. actively see a community of people cleaning up or just, you know, going through the recycling bins at buildings and stuff. But these are residential places. And most people who are doing that actually have a path that they follow day by day, week by week, because this is like a way for them to make either a primary source of income or secondary source. I'm actually helping out some business owners that are struggling to keep their doors open right now. And another reason why I'm pro Bitcoin on this in this industry is that New York hasn't raised the bottle bill of 5 cents to since 1980s. So this cents has been going around for 40 plus years. And this is just consumer value. When you go exchange this to businesses, right? Like they take in your product that you're earning the 5 cents for, they also earn what's called a handling fee on top of that. Right now they earn 3.5 cents back for every bottle that they return to a bottle distributor or a bottle producer. So in total, the value of a returned can go between 3.5 cents to 8.5 cents, depending on if the 5 cents was given back to the consumer. That 3.5 cents hasn't changed since 2009. So now we have this whole industry hasn't seen a pay raise for 17 plus years. And a lot of these businesses are struggling to keep their doors open. One, because not enough, there's too many beverage brands coming out. And because now you can just produce as much, you can produce whatever you want now, right? But that's not covered. So there's not enough containers that are covered. And secondly, you have unpaid, unfair labor because these people are basically working on 17 years of wages from 17 years ago, which is really unfortunate. Mm-hmm. So I think Bitcoin has a really big use case in this industry right now. What I've been helping with these business owners is they've been going to one in particular, Jade Eddy. She has been like the forefront of just bottle redemption needing better legislation. There's been 4 years where legislation has kind of come onto the table, and every year the government passes on it. And all these business owners are asking for is livable wages and not doing unpaid labor for bottles that aren't covered, because most of the times people will bring their containers to these businesses and these businesses have to tell them, hey, it's state law. We can't take this. We can't even pay you for it. Right. And so to go back to what I was saying, the Jade Eddy did and a few other business owners went to a budget bill hearing and talked. And one of the guys who was talking predominantly speaks Spanish. So the English translation was, yeah, me and my wife started doing this to, you know, give our kid some money when he gets older. But then we found out that, like, within 5 hours every day of just, you know, putting in the routes and the work, we were able to actually supplement a primary income just through doing bottle bill work, five hours a day. You see people push grocery carts worth, literally talk with their neighbors and, like, they pile together all these depositable items to then call someone to come pick them up. You have pickups between 1,000 items to like 10 to 20,000 items sometimes, accumulated between a few weeks to a few days to even like a few months. There's just so much opportunity here, and it's a very undigitized industry right now. And so my goal is to bring digitization to it, but then also, how do we bring Bitcoin into this industry? Really, how do I get Bitcoin into everyone's pocket so eventually we can all just be saving it and spending it without having to go through the barriers of on-chain Bitcoin, then to Lightning Bitcoin, and having to learn about all that? Because really, 10 years in this industry, even working at Amboss now, everything I've learned about the Lightning Network, and I still think I'm a novice compared to people who really understand Lightning.
Yeah, Lightning's very intimidating. Even before this, I was just linking like something on my Albi account to my Albi node, and like on my Start 9, and even like somebody like me that like is like in the space and, you know, understands it, it's still like, what am I actually doing here? Like, why isn't this working? Or anyway, okay, so that's really very interesting, and it's great. I guess I didn't realize, it seems like, because if you think of 5 cents, you think that's not a lot of money. But I guess it's just the scaling of it all. And that it actually can turn out to be a decent sum of money. And if it's in Bitcoin, then, I mean, in my understanding of how your things works is that this would be non-KYC, correct? Or do you need to do KYC?
It's no KYC. So the goal is to remain fully 100% self-custodial. In New York, right, we have the BIT license. So any custody of funds requires you to have this like license, which takes a lot of time and money. And there's a possibility you don't even get the license between all of that. So when I started building out the idea, I was like, all right, how do we remain 100% self-custodial, including any of the businesses who would be on the, who would be running these like self-hosted nodes or self-hosted RVMs? Because all my business is really trying to do is enable the software and build out the paths for this to be something on a larger scale. And that's where I think a big barrier to entry becomes, is like, all right, well, if I have 5 cents that I can just go get in fiat, why would I choose Bitcoin, right? And then if I choose Bitcoin, what are the steps within that, right? Like, I still have to get a wallet. I have to be able to use said wallet or just like learn the basic functions. And I think at least being in the United States, I don't see as much Bitcoin adoption or usage as opposed to like anywhere outside of the United States. So it really would be, all right, well, here's how to download a wallet that you 100% have control over, and here are the next steps to take from that.
Yes. Okay, that's great then, that the redemption for the recycling is non-KYC. So that's even better, even more of an incentive to pursue this as like another income stream. But real quick, what you said, RVM, what's RVM?
Oh yeah, so RVM stands for reverse vending machine.
Oh, okay.
Basically, it looks like a vending machine, but instead of like a glass display of food and then you have like the thing at the bottom where you grab the thing out of, it's a, think about it like a airplane screen. It's small, so you can just like interface with it. And then there's a hole big enough to put your empty bottles into.
Oh, okay.
And then the camera in the inside of like the hole will scan the QR code and let you know if it's depositable or not.
Oh, so each bottle is being scanned individually?
Yeah. So you have to basically be able to tell if the product or if the container had a deposit paid to it. So if I bought a bunch of LaCroix, so take LaCroix for instance, actually no, Gatorade. Gatorade's a better example because Gatorade is not depositable. So if I go to the store and I get a six pack of Gatorade and then I go to an RVM and I try to redeem my empty Gatorade bottles for 5 cents a piece, the machine's going to tell me that there's no deposit on that bottle because I didn't pay 5 cents for it. But also, according to New York State, Gatorade's not even covered. So that's where a lot of the confusion ends up taking place for people who, just for like people who consume beverages, right? Like what is depositable versus what is not. And then because this is a state thing and you're in New Jersey, let's say you decide to bring your empty beer bottles to New York, right? If you went to a redemption business, do not do this because it is fraud, but they would probably take it because they're not sitting there scanning every individual bottle as you're as it's coming in. They do it when they sort. But if you were to go to a machine and be like, all right, let me put this beer in, right? Let me get my 5 cents. It will tell you it wasn't bought in New York. So you won't get your 5 cents per bottle. The machine will actually reject taking anything that's not depositable.
Interesting. Very interesting. Not financial advice. so how does this work? And I don't know if it's even in the realm of the conversation, but how does this work from like a, I don't want to say manufacturing, but like why does New York State do this versus other states that don't do it? Do you know the reason behind that?
There are 10 states in the United States that have legislation around a bottle bill, and all of those states have about 60% recycling rate or higher, specifically for beverage containers, right? Like recycling can encompass cardboard boxes, food cans, all these different things. This is numbers specifically for anything that you drink out of cans, glass bottles, plastic bottles. The reason legislation went into place was to have a cleaner environment and to get people to, do their part in consumption. Also reduces waste stream, right? So anything that ends up going into regular curbside pickup, or not curbside pickup, curbside waste management, at least in New York, you put it on curbside, right? I think most places you do in the bins, but that has to go through a centralized party. Then that then processes between your trash and your recycling. And in some places, actually, this isn't bottle bill states, just in general, you pay to have your trash picked up by the community and then also processed, right? It ends up like waste management ends up being for profit. In the case of being able to actually be like, all right, let me just pull out plastic bottles, glass bottles, and cans, you essentially reduce the amount of single stream or like that product in a single stream so that your actual waste management can be focused on other items rather than something that can easily just be pulled out and recycled. Aluminum takes about 500 years to decompose. Glass, or like break down glass, can be infinitely recycled. Plastic takes 500 plus years. So we are missing out on so much opportunity by not recycling and just allowing that product to go into the trash. as far as why states choose to allow this to happen, who knows? There's so much opportunity for states to make so much money by implementing such a bill, because the state isn't the one who's paying it out. It's the bottle producers, the people who actually are producing the waste in the first place, right? Like, mm-hmm. for the longest time, recycling has been put on the consumers. Oh, you use this product, now you have to do something about it. That's the opposite of exactly what recycling needs to be about. If you as a producer are producing something that can produce waste, isn't it on you, and maybe this is just forward thinking, to do your part, right? Like, if you're going to put something out there, you should be able to take it back and put it into a stream. And in most cases, in non-bottle bill states, this just goes into waste management. And sometimes it ends up as scrap value, very, very small value, but there's still value to it. And places like New York State, where there's actually value to it, you see higher rates because people are willing to return it. So I'm going to intrigue you here for a second, because like, you'll be quite shocked about these numbers. Any deposit that isn't returned, so let's say over the course of a year, I just put all of my water bottle and beer bottles onto curbside, right? And let's just say waste management picks it up. That money, if no one takes my deposit, the state gets 80% of all of those unclaimed deposits. So over the last 20 years, New York State has deposited $2 billion, about over $100 million worth of non-deposits or of deposits every year. And so state gets 80%, and then the producers get 20%. So even the people who are producing these products, if they're not given back to, if like they're not paying for the return of them, they get 20% of those unclaimed deposits. So $20 million a year. That's a lot of money just going into pockets just for, you know, unclaimed. And there's a struggle right now, not just with the raise, but then also like with the same value for 17 years, is that these businesses are having to deal with that, like legislation of these bigger companies are basically lobbying to not have a better bigger bottle bill, right? Like not put up the prices to 10-cent deposits, not take the handling fee to 7 cents, not add more containers to be covered. And it comes from this thought process of, oh, there's going to be a loss of profit. But if you could include 50% more of the containers, right? If we say 50% of the containers are covered and 50% are not, we can include the 50% that aren't and raise the value up, we're looking at the state gaining another $100 million. It's not people's behavior behind bottle redemption isn't going to change overnight, right? Like, you aren't going to see a mass amount of people go start to recycle just because it's up to 10 cents. But you'll see a gradual change. And with that, I mean, the state pockets the money from it. It kind of boggles my mind that the state won't see it that way. And neither will the producers. But I think producers also just kind of look at it as like a cha-ching in their pocket. And then that also varies state by state. Like the 80-20 is New York State specific. Michigan doesn't have a handling fee, but they have a 10-cent deposit. And almost every container is covered. So, you know, they have more of like 80, 90% return rate, but people also want the 10 cents. Like 10 containers gets you a dollar. That's great. And you don't have to separate what is depositable versus what's not depositable. You could literally just throw a party, have a bag, and go return your containers.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, especially when you start thinking about it and how it would scale, that there is a lot of money being left. That a lot of money that the consumer could be getting back, because obviously when you purchase it, you are spending that good or not. Well, you are spending the fee, I guess, or for the bottle redemption. But even if you just were to make deals with friends, family that don't care, And you're literally just pocketing their like leftover money that they're just leaving on a table instead of, as you said, the state or the corporation getting it again. But so like in the case of Gatorade, why aren't Gatorade bottles redeemable? Is that something to do with Gatorade themselves like opting out of it, or is that just like, do you know why that is the case, why some things essentially are redeemable and some things aren't redeemable?
Yeah, there's a classification. So water containing sugar is not covered. So things like Gatorade, Arizona tea, like stuff like that. It's very nuanced to what the drink is specifically. So like carbonated beverages are covered. Water not containing sugar is covered. But if it contains sugar, like in this case of Gatorade, it's just not covered, which is unfortunate. And also, I guess there's a lot of tea brands, right? You have like Snapple, you have there's a specific one I'm thinking about, but I don't know the name of the brand. Mr. G actually did this really interesting experiment because he was putting out videos on YouTube. But he was like, okay, if we go to a beverage fridge and we look at all these beverages that are like we can choose from one off, what is covered under the deposit and what is not covered on the deposit. And when you look at the picture, almost half of the beverage fridge is not deposit. And when you look at it, like, right, someone who's coming from out of state's not going to think twice about that, right? Like, they don't know. But like also most New Yorkers don't know either. This industry is like either you know a lot about it because you've been interested in it, or you're just novice about it because you're doing your part, but that's about it. They don't make it easy for people to understand and know what is and what isn't depositable. Unless I guess you're checking your receipts.
Yeah. Interesting. So do you know, is it the sugar thing because of some kind of health thing in the recycling process, or is it completely unrelated? Do you know? Or
that's one of the things.
So it's like, oh, okay. Oh, very interesting. A lot to be learned in this conversation. And then, so how on the Bitcoin side of things, how is that all working out? Because obviously, you need to be taking in the fiat and then, well, converting it over to Bitcoin and then giving the Bitcoin to the person, to the consumer that is, you know, obviously dropping off the products. But then, and obviously for you to make financially sense, you are taking some kind of fee. How does it all work on the Bitcoin backend, if that makes sense?
Yeah. Actually this is why the work that I'm doing at Amboss and what Amboss is doing is very relevant here. So have you heard about like Taproot assets on Lightning?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Sweet. So for the audience, Taproot assets on Lightning is basically you can mint stable coins onto the Lightning network, and it enables the user, like, if I'm going to send and receive, you can send in whatever currency you want. And you can, the person that you're sending to can receive in whatever currency that they want. So to start, the way I'm building out the back end for this is a self-hosted node at this moment. It's Phoenix D, and a front end interface with LN URL withdrawal. So basically the user scans the QR code that's put on the screen, and the Bitcoin is sent to their Lightning wallet from that. And it's a one-time code that's pulled right once they finish putting all in all of their bottles, and they kind of hit finish, and it will we do the price conversion at that time. So from the receiver side, you can receive in BTC. Now, what I like about Taproot assets on Bitcoin, which has changed this thought process for me, because originally it was BTC to BTC, I could essentially have a wallet of like USDT. So I don't even have to pull from my Bitcoin stack. And so whenever an LN with URL is called, I can basically convert the USDT to the Bitcoin when they pull it. So in-flight currency exchange, near zero fees instantaneously. I'm working with someone out in California who is interested in also building this machine. He recently reached out to me. So this idea has been on my, like, I've been working towards this idea for a few years. This is a recent contact slash partnership opportunity that came across. And this guy wants to build his own reverse vending machine and enable Bitcoin payments, but he doesn't really know much about the Bitcoin payment side. And I'm like, great, this is where I come into handy. Not just that, because this is also what I'm building, right? I have my software, and then the software also will enable Bitcoin payments. And with that, he'll be the one who actually hosts the Phoenix D node, because it is his reverse vending machine. He'll be the one putting the funds into it, but Rebottle is licensing that technology out to him, both the reverse vending machine software and the Lightning node part. And then as far as California has slightly different rules to their bottle bill than New York. So that's something that would have to be kept in mind. And then there's the whole thing about like legality of Bitcoin payments and stuff. So again, that's going to always just remain 100% self-custodial to every party.
Okay. Interesting. So essentially you have a pile of USDT, and then when the customer goes to the RVM and they do the whole process, essentially the fiat redemption is being sent to you, and then you're just sending out the USDT, converting it to Bitcoin and giving it to the customer. Is that correct? Is that how that works in simple terms?
Actually, that first part that you said, we don't get the deposit first, right? Like, this is, it's an exchange. So they're giving me their depositable items and I'm giving them payment. And then when I go, let's just say I'm like the RVM operator, right? If when I go return those bottles and cans to the producer itself, right? Because I would be the middleman in this case. That's when I get paid that back, that 5 cent deposit and the handling fee on top of that.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. Because you own the machine itself.
Yeah, I'm just recovering the money that I paid to the consumer. On top of that, I'll get the handling
fee. Yeah. Yeah, okay. So you're essentially just saying, hey, instead of getting fiat for your cans, use my machine, I'll give you Bitcoin, and then you have to go collect the actual physical cans and bottles and do the conversion and like drop them off at a center or do the process yourself to get the money. To get to be essentially paid back, I guess that is the way to put it. That's correct. I have this correct now.
So you put your stuff in the machine. Let's just do this example, because you cut off a little bit. You put your bottles into a machine. I'm the machine operator. So you want Bitcoin, so you get paid out in Bitcoin. Now I have your bottles plus a bunch of other people's bottles. Now I sort so as a business myself, I would sort through those containers to make sure that they're piled up by distributor, Coca-Cola, Miller Lite, Corona, etc. And then I would contact the distributor and return those items to them. And then I would get my payout from that. And it's not like a daily thing. So some of these businesses don't get paid out for like 2-3 weeks after they return the containers, because you know the producer or the distributor has to do their own diligence for that.
So then how many machines do you currently have deployed, and is there like a map to like locate them?
The machines are still being developed. So I'm working with my contact out in California, along with Mr. G. So Mr. G also does hardware AI and AI development. And so he's building out the camera detection system of the reverse vending machine. So for context, originally the quote of a machine with no software was like $35,000. And the partner was like, no, I'm good. I would rather just build this out myself. And I'm like, cool. So I'll do the software part. You do the machine itself. And Mr. G will do the camera part. And we'll just integrate that together. I anticipate the first machine will be done by the summer.
Cool.
Yeah, it really is just dependent on how long it takes the partner to build the actual machine itself. And then as far as the software part, I've been using Claude Code to help me out on getting that done. And then my CTO will help me with like the integration from software to hardware.
Do you have an idea yet of where you're going to place the first machine?
California. We're licensing the software and the camera hardware to the RVM partner. And said partner already has a couple of places in Los Angeles that he'd be able to put the machine residentially. So one thing he also realized was that these machines are usually in like outside stores, like grocery stores or commercial places. There's none that actually are near residential places, even though it makes more sense to have a machine near a residential place, right? Like, why would I, if I'm in a place where I have to take a car, right? If my primary mode of transportation is a vehicle, I think one of the biggest things of people between people actually taking their recycling to get their deposit back is the fact that they have to take physically that material somewhere. So if you can just go somewhere as quick as like the apartment complex down your street or in your building to, you know, trade your empty bottles for money, there's more opportunity there than going like having to take that back to a store every time. Because I'm an avid recycler myself, but you will not catch me taking my bottles to a store 20 minutes away. It's just not happening. But I also I live in a place where I walk 3 blocks and I have 2 different centers, like operation centers, where I just go drop off my material. He asks me how many containers I have, and then he just pays me in cash. I would love at this point to the ability to be like, yo, can I get this back in Bitcoin and just like have him zap my wallet? But that integration will definitely be post MVP. I will rave about Claude Code. I have reduced my engineering timeline by like 3 months because of Claude Code. And I've been able to clean up a lot of code by it that way too. And in doing so, I think this year is definitely a year for recycling for Bitcoin. Like definitely the first exchange for bottles for Bitcoin will happen. I have no doubt about that. And it's funny too, because like I'm talking about this in the United States, but anywhere else, even in Europe, recycling is such it's a part of the livelihood. Germany has like 98% bottle redemption rate, which is insane. Like how can we mimic something so similar in the United States? But I mean, like, Germany's Germany. They're doing it as a country. United States is doing it in bits and pieces, right? Like, I can't do this state by state, or I have to do this state by state where there is actual legislation. And the places that don't have legislation is then dealing with the scrap market. And I think the scrap market right now is just more nuanced, because it's like, are you getting enough product to be able to justify keeping a business open? And the goal through the software I'm building is, how do we enable circularity in every and any community just through something as simple as recycling? And then anyone who really wants to get ahead and on the forefront will be able to be the person who's like, yeah, let me just give you Bitcoin for your bottles and cans, and can create a new business like that, like a local small business to do something like that.
Yeah, it's very fascinating. It's definitely a large business that you would go unnoticed, I guess, or like it doesn't seem like there's a business there, but there totally is when you get into it. And have you actually been to Germany? Because I've been to Berlin. Well, and other places in Germany, but have you been to Germany?
Yes, as like 3 hour kind of just like in between trains between different countries, 3-4 hours.
Okay.
I did not really get to spend much time. I was in like 3 different cities. Those cities are definitely like not coming to mind right now, but at most we went maybe a 10-minute walk from the train stations for food. We didn't really go out exploring in Germany.
Okay. Yeah, I asked because when I was there, it's kind of interesting because my when we bought beers or whatever just to walk around with, and like my friend just like places it on the ground, and I'm like, what? And he's like, oh yeah, no, everyone does this. Like, you usually like you try to place it near like a garbage can or something, but you kind of just like place your recycling, your bottles and stuff down if you don't want to take care of it yourself, and like people will just come around and collect it. So it's very fascinating and very different than the US. And I've lived in Italy, and the recycling side there is you have 5 different options. Well, there's 5 different dumpsters essentially, because you have one like general trash, one for paper, one for metal, one for glass, and one for food. And I know like in Scandinavia, I think one of the Scandinavian countries, they even import another country's garbage to essentially process it and recycle it, because they also, I think, do something with maybe energy production. I forget. But yeah, Europe's off the charts when it comes to just taking care of their recycling and their trash and their, I guess, just not occupying more landfill space than is needed. Just, reusing and recycling. So shout out Europe in this case. Ideally, yeah, we can do better as a country in the U.S. I'm also big into recycling. I've never done the RVM method because we don't do it in New Jersey. But the Bitcoin stuff, if your machines, I know they will, but when they make it out to New York, if I like see them, like, why not maybe harvest some cans and stuff and get some Bitcoin, non-KYC. I guess we should get close to wrapping up. Is there anything else you'd like to add to this discussion? Anything else that the listener, you want them to know about, well, you or what you're doing?
I agree with your point with United States definitely needs to be like do better. We are pretty far behind. I did go to this talk. It was like an event talking about like how do we achieve 100% aluminum circularity, and someone from like the government came and was like talking, and he was talking about, oh, we got to make it a federal like level for aluminum, because aluminum is a resource that will eventually run out of primary aluminum, and it becomes a matter of national security when the United States ends up running out of aluminum. And so he was talking about the potential of a federal wide legislation for that type of recycling. And so for me, it's like, it'd be great to see the United States actually move from state to state recycling to a federal level. We'll see. The United States is kind of run by corporations and too much lobbying, and
yeah,
it's inevitable it'll happen. It's just when, and I can't really build a company based off of when. I have to build it off of right now. And I'm really excited to watch what's going to come this year. And Bitcoin like price being down also means that not enough people are paying attention, unless you're in the Bitcoin space, which makes it even better because now you can just stack stats for lower. Yeah. When the Bitcoin price goes back up, people are probably going to start like being like, oh, this is an option. And hopefully by that time we have a few machines. I don't anticipate it taking too long once the first machine's like done and we've done like a few weeks of testing.
Nice. Very solid. Very cool. Is there any place that the audience can learn more about you and about the business? Where do you want to send people?
Oh.
And I'll include links in the description, obviously.
Yeah, I may send people to my LinkedIn. I don't really use Twitter anymore, unless it's for work. And then rebottle.app if you're interested in looking at the website, but there's nothing Bitcoin related on there right now. Honestly, I post most of my updates on this on my LinkedIn.
Okay. Rebottle.app though. So I'll put that on your LinkedIn link. You're not on Nos. Cool. And you, Yeah, we totally, I think we exchanged that in person. Are you active?
No.
I am not. It's like as if we did. I think we did, but I haven't seen anything over the past week. All right.
I'll drop my doctor to just in case. The Daniel's been trying to get me to use Noster a lot more. And yeah, really only go on to social media now for work purposes. Otherwise, most of the times I think as I've gotten older, just like less and less social media would be great. But Bitcoin's always moving and busting. And so it's like, you gotta keep up with it. Otherwise, like a week later on vacation, you're like, how much did I miss?
Yeah, that's crazy. Like I'm a heavy Yacht Noster user, and if I go like a couple days without really being active on it, I feel like I'm slightly out of the loop. I get that it's a very small niche community of us on there, but still, like, I don't know, things move fast. But what's great is that like I use Noster because I want to use Noster, not because I'm addicted to the algorithm, because there is no algorithm. So that's cool. Great. Well, Avan, thanks so much for coming on. Maybe we can chat again once you get some machines out and you get some insights into how it's all working, and it'd be great to hear more once you have some real world data, and once the business is like cooking along. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. This was fun to be able to talk about this project and talk more in depth about why, and also to kind of teach a little bit more. Putting Bitcoin in everyone's pocket is the inevitable goal. So how do you accelerate Bitcoin adoption?
That's my part. Every means possible, even recycling. Great. Well, thanks again. And we'll have you on again. And thanks so much. And thanks for listening, everybody. Bye.